You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator. What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to Birdland Tonight. This is our first regular season installment of Birdland Tonight here. I'm Paul Valley, hosting our first ever post-game show. Joining me is Joe Chambers. Joe, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Paul. I'm just happy starting the season 1-0.
Yeah, it was a great performance all the way around. John Means goes 7 innings of one hit ball, no walks, 5 strikeouts. He throws 97 pitches, 65 for strikes. The only hit he gave up was the leadoff hitter of the game, and that was Kike Hernandez. He picked him off at first base, only faced 3 batters in the first inning. He was off and running. Retired the last 18 batters that he faced to finish his day. Orioles get that win 3-0. What did you see from Means today that you liked?
I really liked Means' control. He seemed like he was in the game, focused. I mean, like you said, first hit was the first batter, and after that, he just was phenomenal. I mean, I felt so good when he was pitching in terms of feeling safe with the lead. And then when Mountcastle hit that huge double, I was like, I thought that was gone, first of all. I thought that was a shot and a half. And just seeing how well Means was composed for his first at-bat, and then and then for the whole rest of the 7 innings, it was just really great to see him so consistent.
It was definitely something to see. And if you recall, the Orioles found themselves in a very similar situation last year. The season started on a Friday in Fenway against Nathan Eovaldi. And that game did not turn out in the Orioles' favor. They lost that one 13-2, a completely different story in this game today for the Orioles. Again, John Means dominant. The bullpen comes in and they do their job. Tanner Scott, he gets out of the 8th inning despite 2 walks. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. And Cesar Valdez, with that dead fish changeup, comes into the game and works a scoreless 9th inning. Does give up the double to J.D. Martinez, but nothing else. And the Orioles get the win 3-0. You mentioned the Ryan Mountcastle double. And Ryan Mountcastle is a professional hitter. And if you haven't seen him play yet, fans, this guy is somebody that you're going to want to watch. I think it speaks to the fact to how good of a hitter he is, that he's 24 years old. He has 33 professional games under his belt, and he's batting cleanup on a major league team on opening day in his first full season. The guy's a professional hitter.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Just seeing him, you know, this was his first opening day, because last year during the short season due to COVID, he came in, what was it, like middle of the season, late middle season around that time? Am I right, Paul?
just about midseason. They let him get his feet under him at the alternate training site in Bowie, and then he came up and got started and never stopped.
Yeah, and just relaying off of that, look at Cedric Mullins when he led off the game with a checked swing and it turned into a base hit to start the game. Yeah, that was
It's funny because I watched the very first pitch of the game was a 99-mile-an-hour fastball in the inner third of the plate by Nathan Eovaldi, and I almost tweeted out, oh, man, Cedric doesn't have a chance here. And then he checks swing, cues one off the fist. It goes down the third baseline. He beats it out for an infield single. Actually, there was nothing to beat out. There was no throw on the play. Then Trey Mancini comes up, and Trey Mancini's the story of the day, right?
Absolutely.
The Orioles get the win, and John Means has a stellar performance. But the real story is Trey Mancini playing in his first regular season game since 2019, since he was last spring. Everybody knows last spring he was diagnosed with stage 3 colon cancer in spring training, missed the entire truncated season, comes out today, and step one is complete for Trey. He gets back into a regular season lineup, first game jitters. First two at-bats weren't the results that we were looking for. He grounded into two double plays, two at-bats, four outs. Not exactly what you're looking for, but just to get Trey Mancini back on the field, back in this lineup, hitting the heart of the Orioles order, was something to see, and that's going to be a storyline throughout this year, is it not?
Absolutely. You know, disregard his first two at-bats. It's just the fact that he's back playing is the most important thing. You know, coming back from battling cancer and just being able to play baseball. And, you know, he actually got a hit today too. So
yeah,
just seeing him on the first game in the full season, getting an at-bat and getting a hit after what he had to go through is pretty remarkable.
Well, yeah, Trey, after those first two at-bats, he comes up his third plate appearance, has a little bit better of an at-bat, takes a walk, and actually is part of that sixth-run inning. He scored the second run on the Ryan Mountcastle double. Bases loaded, Mountcastle coming to the plate, works a 3-1 count. There's a pitch off the outside corner that – it was a ball, but Joe West calls it a strike. He misses it. Next pitch, Mountcastle hits it high off the Green Monster for the 2-run double. That scores Severino, scores Trey Mancini. And the Orioles never looked back. They added an attack on run there in the eighth inning on Anthony Santander, RBI single, after the Trey Mancini base hit. From this offense today, now look, they faced Nathan Eovaldi three times last year. He was 3-0 with two earned runs allowed in 19 innings with 18 strikeouts. And more of the same from Eovaldi today. 5 1/3 innings pitched. He struck out 4, gave up just the 1 earned run. But he actually took the loss, something he didn't do against the Orioles at all last year. Takes the loss on the opening day just by giving up that 1 run. What did you see from the Orioles' offense today? Because despite the fact that they were kind of held down for much of the day, I did not see too many bad at-bats from this lineup, save for Austin Hayes' first two at-bats and maybe Mountcastle's first at-bat. Other than that, I thought that the Orioles were not overly aggressive at the plate. They ran a lot of full counts, saw a lot of pitches. I thought they did an overall nice job against a really talented pitcher in Nathan Eovaldi.
Yeah, the O's were, you know, a big start out, you know, trying to get some hits were a little bit challenging. And then once it got middle of the game, late game, we were getting those hits. And, you know, I think Eovaldi going out. And when I was tracking stats, I was looking at my stats after doing the game. Looking at Eovaldi at the end of like each inning compared to Means, he was like throwing 10 more pitches. So yeah, they're actually doing really good work in their at bats. And that's what you need in MLB. I think it's just working your at bat. Don't go in, you know, first swing pitch. You know, we all know the first swing pitch, probably the best thing in Orioles history was Delmon Young's double down the left field line. I can actually recite the announcer doing that whole thing, by the way, but getting back to the opening day, just, you know, seeing them working their at-bats, I think, was key to getting this W.
Absolutely. And one at-bat in particular that really stands out to me that led to another run for the Orioles in the eighth inning was Cedric Mullins to lead off the eighth. It was a 10-pitch at-bat. He kept fouling off pitches. On the 10th pitch, he deposits a single into right field, ends up scoring on that Santander base hit. And that was kind of a microcosm of what the Orioles did in this game. And I like how you compared the two pitchers where it seemed like Eovaldi had 10 more pitches than John Means after every inning. One thing that we saw from John Means today that we haven't seen from him much in the past was pitch efficiency. And when he would get ahead of the hitters, he didn't end up having these long battles where the guy ends up getting a base hit or gets a walk or he fouls off six or seven pitches before eventually popping out. He was putting guys away, maybe not with the strikeout, but getting guys to put the ball in play, pitching to contact, letting the defense play behind him. And the defense did their job. And when you can keep your defense active and on their toes, it's going to make your entire team a lot better.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more on that. Absolutely.
So, and we just mentioned Cedric Mullins. He had himself a nice game. He had two singles today, a run scored. Cedric Mullins, to me, heading into this season, profiled as a fourth outfielder who you probably see actually play three, maybe four times a week in different spots. But it looks like just based off this opening day lineup, that they're going to want to get Cedric Mullins in that lineup as much as possible because he seems to be, at least through one game and through the spring, a solid table setter. He led the majors with nine bunt singles last year. So he can get on base and use his speed to his advantage. Plays really solid defense. Didn't misplay a single ball. Seemed to track down everything today. What are your hopes for Cedric Mullins? Is he going to be batting leadoff more often than not this year? Is this the guy that the Orioles have who might be their next great leadoff hitter?
I think he'll definitely be a good leadoff hitter, comparing him to Nick Markakis a little bit. Just how well, you know, the same, they bat from the right side, though the left side. So, you know, they're just, the potential for Mullins right now is really good. You know, he's been with the team that's been, you know, in the rebuilding process. But seeing Mullins today, I like how his first game was, getting the first game jitters out of the way. And, you know, just seeing how they came back yesterday from, you know, postponement. So that's why they played today. And then now they're going to play for, what is it, like a couple days? And then they have a break again, I'm assuming?
They actually play six games in a row from today through next Wednesday. Three in Boston, three in New York. It's actually seven games in a row because then they have the home opener next Thursday against the Red Sox before that built-in off day. In case of inclement weather like we had yesterday in Boston, they have that off day built in for the Orioles home opener next Friday. So that's their next day off before concluding that series against Boston on Saturday and Sunday. So, yeah, Cedric Mullins had a nice start. Didn't really seem to show a ton of jitters in this game. The guy who did, to me, was Austin Hayes. And Austin Hayes played with his hair on fire all spring, trying to prove to everybody that he's not a platoon guy. This is a guy who is going to be an everyday player. And he proved that this spring, hit .391, four homers, a few doubles, led the team in RBIs and hits. But then he comes out today, and this was something that I saw from Austin Hayes last year, where at the beginning of the year, it seemed the moment was a little too big for him. He finds himself in a two-strike hole in each of his first two at-bats, chases two fastballs out of the zone to strike out in each of those first two at-bats. I liked his approach a lot better in the third at bat, even though he flew out to right field. He took a couple of pitches, waited to get his pitch, got the barrel on the baseball, but just got under a little bit out to right. And then he strikes out again in his fourth at bat. I don't think that that's what we're going to see from Austin Hayes the majority of the time, but it seemed to me that maybe the moment at the beginning of the year is a little bit too big for Austin Hayes because he's trying to prove that he belongs. But I feel like he's already done that.
Yeah, he does belong. You know, he just was one of those guys that is up and coming, like Mountcastle. You know, he's trying to make his point to the Brandon Hyde, just showing him, you know, he's worked to be able to stay in this lineup for a long time.
Yeah, this is a guy who the Orioles have batting sixth today. And when he bats towards the lower third of the order, he tends to do better. They tried batting him leadoff a bunch last year, and it didn't really work out too well. He seems to do better when there's not as much pressure to set the table. I expect to see him probably move up maybe to fifth in this lineup if you continue to have somebody like Mancini or Santander bat second. But that also hinges on if DJ Stewart comes back healthy next week, where are you going to bat him? And then you could see Hayes move all over this lineup throughout this season. Another guy, Rio Ruiz. He started the last two games of spring training at second base. Brandon Hyde said, don't read too much into that. I actually did read into that. I thought to myself, he's starting him at second base these last two games for a reason. And sure enough, he's starting at second base today. And Joe, it looked like he belonged. He went out there, two over the shoulder, reaching out grabs on pop-ups that were highlight reel plays. Then in the eighth inning, on a ground ball by, I want to say it was, I can't remember who the batter was off my head, but it was a nice diving. Oh, it was Verdugo. In the seventh inning, it was to lead off the inning. John Means, he comes out the seventh inning at 77 pitches, and you're looking at it and you're thinking, this is a base hit. He might be taken out of the game. Nope, there's Rio Ruiz. Diving play in the hole, gets up, throws a strike over the first base. They get the out. Next thing you know, Means has a 3-3 down inning, again, retiring 18 batters in a row to end his day. And the Orioles go on to win the game. How good did Rio Ruiz look at second base? And is this a role you expect him to fill more often than not after seeing his game today?
I really like how Rio Ruiz played today. Just like, you know, early in the game, like you were mentioning, just running out into the outfield. Like I saw a stat on Madsen saying he reached like almost 25 miles per hour sprinting for those. Wow. And I was like, man, that's impressive. And, you know, just seeing how it shows that if our outfielder can't get there right away, we got a good chance with Rio Ruiz getting there. And, you know, because there were some times I thought those balls were going to drop. I really did. And then just seeing him just over the shoulder, just getting them out was really impressive for me. And I really like that. I think I see Rio Ruiz definitely being in second base for a good amount of time.
Yeah, it's certainly. And look, when DJ Stewart comes back, DJ Stewart isn't coming off the injured list to go down to the minor leagues. He's going to be on this major league roster. He's one of the better OBP guys, showed a lot of power, not just towards the end of last year, but in spring training this year, despite the fact that he hasn't played since March 5th. He might do a rehab assignment, or maybe not a rehab assignment, but he might go to the alternate training site to get his feet under him. But this is a guy who's going to be on the major league roster. And I've thought since for the last couple of weeks that when he comes back, Ruiz is the odd man out, especially since they got Michael Franco. It's up to Ruiz to keep himself on this roster. And his play today is a reason why he could still be here when Stewart gets back. But look, he's going to need to swing the bat. People know that he can play defense. Despite some of the shortcomings last year, where I think he took some of his offensive struggles into the infield, people know that he can play defense. So, yeah, it was nice to see him make those defensive plays, say those highlight reel plays. But he's got to come out and swing the bat. It's day one. He's got more games to get under his belt before they have to make a decision on this roster. And I think he might hit just enough to keep himself part of the Orioles' plans this year. Now, people that are certainly part of the Orioles' plans this season are in that bullpen. And you're looking at Tanner Scott, who came in to work the eighth today, and Cesar Valdez, who came in to work the ninth. Let's talk about Tanner Scott first, because he has maybe the most dynamic arm, if not on the entire team, at least in that entire bullpen. Can touch 98, 99 with his fastball, has a wipeout slider that sits in the low 90s. And he comes out and he strikes out the first batter he faces on an absolutely filthy slider to begin the eighth inning. Excuse me. It's 2-2 on Devers to begin the eighth inning. He throws a slider that hits the outside corner. Looks like it's a perfect painted pitch on the corner. Joe West calls to the ball. He walks Devers on the next pitch. Then he gets Renfro with the strikeout on the filthy slider. Renfro 0-for-3 with three strikeouts today. But Tanner Scott, two walks in that eighth inning. Despite having maybe the most electric arm on the team, he's not coming out to pitch in that ninth inning in that closer's role. And is that because, Joe, he has a propensity to walk a lot of batters? He averaged 6.5 walks per nine in 2019, went down to 4.5 last year, but for his career, it's a 5.5. Do the Orioles not trust him in the ninth inning until he proves he can get that control under control?
I think he needs to get his control under control right now because, you know, I was reading right now, I was doing all the stats of terms of looking at pitch speeds and everything. And if you look at his first batter he faced, 0-1, 96 miles an hour, 1-1, 97, 2-1, 90 miles per hour, 97, 2-2, full count, he threw a 97 mile an hour pitch, and then he walked at 98. So he can throw gas. Like, that's not a problem. But he's got, you know, when you throw gas, you got to make sure you can locate him. And I don't think he should be a closer yet. Give him a few, maybe a month or two, maybe even three, and then we'll see how it goes. But Valdez, you know, he did good too, but I think Scott would be a better fit in my personal opinion.
Scott may have the better arm and maybe the better fit down the road, but let's talk about Valdez for a little bit. Had an ERA of about 1.26 last year coming out of that Orioles bullpen. Was 3-for-3 in saves. Now, prior to the 2020 season, Brandon Hyde said the same things he was saying all spring this year, and that's that there's no closer. That there is basically a closer by committee, and then we saw him use Cole Sulcer in that role until Sulcer lost the role for lack of control. He says the same things this year. We don't have a set closer on this team. And most rebuilding teams don't have a set closer because how often are you going to have those closing opportunities? But we saw Valdez, who didn't blow a save last year, come in into a save opportunity today, gets the strikeout, gets the ground out, gives up the double, but then gets the fly out to end the game. Going through the heart of that order, 1, 2, 3, 4, he sets him down in the ninth inning. Is this a sign of things to come? Are we looking at Cesar Valdez maybe holding on to this role to start the year until somebody else comes and takes it from him?
I agree with you 100%. I think right now, just, you know, Brandon Hyde just needs to figure out, okay, put guys in different situations, how they hold, you know, guys like with Valdez, like you're mentioning, seeing how his four batters got him out, but JD Martinez with that double, you know, so now we're one guy, we got a double, and then just seeing how he progressed, you know, is promising. And he's another, he only threw, I believe it was 280 mile an hour pitches. Now it's 85 in his 14 pitches he threw. So he doesn't throw a lot of, you know, fast. So he doesn't throw the ball really fast. But, you know, my worry is if he puts a guy on base that's a speedy runner, you know, that might stolen base, he might get the second or third. And that's my only worry about that.
Yeah, you make a solid point there. If your fastball's topping out at 85 at the absolute max, and you're throwing a lot of 75 to 78 mile an hour changeups, and somebody gets on base, now it depends on who the base runner is too. You're not JD Martinez, for example, isn't going to be stealing third after that double, especially if it would have been the third out. But you know what I mean. If he gets on base, he's not going to go steal second base on anybody. But if you let Xander Bogaerts or Kike Hernandez get on base, and then you throw a 76-mile-an-hour changeup, there's a good chance they could take off and get into scoring position. And if it's a one- or two-run game, that's a big deal. So there's something to be thought about with that. Right now, though, that dead fish changeup, it's something that he's developed late in his career, makes his first opening day roster at 36 years old. Cesar Valdez proving that he, just like Mountcastle and Hayes and Tanner Scott and Cedric Mullins, proving that he belongs on this roster. And the Orioles, they were a top 10 unit out of their bullpen last year, and they're off to the races again this year, looking like, so far through the first game, like they're picking up where they left off. Now, that's just about going to do it for us here on Birdland tonight, unless there's something that we missed that you think we need to cover, Joe.
You know, just looking forward to a great season, you know, no matter what happens. It's great to see baseball back with fans in the stands. Like, this is great. This is what we've all been waiting for a whole year. You know, baseball missed out on it last year, except for the playoffs, but, you know, seeing fans in Oriole Park, Camden Yards is going to be amazing. Just seeing that, even if it's not a full stadium, you know, seeing 11,000 at least on Thursday, it's going to be amazing. And I just can't wait to work with every one of us on Birdland tonight. You know, you're a great guy. I'm really looking forward to working with you further on.
Yeah, it's going to be a good season. Maybe we won't see as many wins like we did today. Maybe we will. Nobody really knows about this starting rotation. John Means, he finished last year 4 impressive starts. Today, arguably the most impressive start of his entire career. And he did something today that he didn't do once in 2020, and that's go 7 innings. He hadn't gone 7 innings since 2019 when he did it 4 or 5 times. Really off to a great start for him. Orioles off to a great start with a 3-0 win, a 2-hitter over the Boston Red Sox, who are looking to make their way back to the playoffs after a down year where they finished in last place in 2020. Tomorrow's game's at 1:10, airing on Masson. You're going to see Orioles' number 2 starter, the Dark Knight, maybe the Dark Knight Rises, in Matt Harvey, going up against Tanner Houck for the Red Sox before the series concludes in the finale on Easter Sunday, another 1:10 p.m. start, where you're going to see Maryland native and Loyola product Bruce Zimmerman facing off against new Red Sox pitcher Garrett Richards. Should be a solid matchup. And hey, the Orioles looking to win a series. It's a lot easier to win a series when you win game 1. So we'll see if they can come back and take game two, if not game two, take game three and try and win a series to start the year. That's going to do it for us here on Birdland tonight, our first of many post-game shows. Join us again tomorrow afternoon, right after the game, 5 minutes after the last out. You'll have creator of the show, host Josh Soroka, who couldn't make the show today, being joined by Andrew Stecca to host the post-game show tomorrow night. Until then, thanks for tuning in, guys. I'm Paul Valley. This has been Joe Chambers, and this has been Birdland Tonight. See you next time.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.